New. We have a website, experiencethebigbook.org. We've recorded the meetings for the last, it'll be 2 years, I think, in March. All the steps are there, the whole book, several times, all sorts of stuff, their tags and their thoughts on recovery. On Saturday, if you can make it, I know a lot of people work, but we're on the second step proposition. Exercise, it's an exercise on how we recognize how we're running the show, and when we have fear, and we have specific tools in this exercise so I can be free of fear. Anybody have fear? Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this exercise is one of the things that's really, really helped me in my sobriety. And I'll have the handout, so if you didn't come last week. And then last week was, we covered the first part of it, and that'll be out on the site probably by New Year's. I update the site every 2 or 3 days. There's another podcast. And on Sunday night, we finished Two Employers, and we're going to be starting really the chapter Vision for You, which is so powerful. There's so much in it. And then when we finish that, we will finish the book for the 10th time on Sunday night. We're in our 11th year. This will be our 11th New Year's. Tonight, we're on more about alcoholism. That's where we are. We're on the beginning of the book. Saturday, we're on the fourth step. And the second step proposition exercise is really about step four, fear. And on Sunday nights, we're going to be a vision for you. So you can see, if you come to the three meetings, you'll get cover the book. Tonight, we are on more about alcoholism. This is chapter three. It's powerful stuff. Ed's not here, but that's what he always says, and it is. Remember, when this book was written in 1939, there was no AA. The title of the book is The Big Book, isn't that right? No, it's AA. It's called Alcoholics Anonymous. Most people don't realize it. The name of the book, we took the name of the book for the name of the fellowship. At the time the book was written, there were three groups in the United States and maybe at most 100 people sober. And this book has changed lives. They wrote it so that if you were an alcoholic and you got this book, if you read it and you did the instructions in the first 102 pages, you would recover. And then you would share this book with someone else. And in the beginning, like Joe and Charlie like to say, the book and the program were the same. And it changed, it's changed over time. We have fellowship and then we have the program. And it's not good or bad, but this meeting is designed to get us back to the instructions on recovery, with a fellowship of people who are seeking the God together. This chapter was put in here before the chapter four, which is We Agnostics, which is going to talk about God. And our disease is a disease of self-centeredness and separation from God, alienation from God. And I've been studying the scriptures, and God does not want us to be alienated, but he allows us to be. He's a gentleman, but he wants us to come back to him. And so all human beings alienate from God. It's our natural way. And for alcoholics, it's fatal, because without God, living self-centered, we don't like the way the world goes. Because we're not just alienated, we are self-will run riot. Anybody believe that? If you don't, look at your, do a four-step. And when we're self-will run riot, we don't like the way things are going. And we've learned, our mind's been trained, that either a drug or alcohol will fix that. Now, that would be okay, except that we can't control how much we use or drink. And we make a lot of bad decisions when we're using, and we make a lot of bad decisions sober. This chapter is really powerful. It's about why we take the first drink. And we have to understand what happens and why we take it, because the solution to my problem with alcohol is to not drink, right? Anybody agree with that? Mm-hmm. Not drinking is a good idea. Mm-hmm. The problem is that we have to understand we are powerless over alcohol. We cannot keep from taking the first drink. And that gets fixed through your relationship with God. I can never fix that on my own. But God will tell me, bad idea, Michael, if I'm connected to him. I'll never drink again if I have God in my life. It's guaranteed. So I don't have any power to choose not to drink today. You'll say, why? I mean, you know, I've been sober. I only have the power to seek God and to choose to seek God. And if I have God in my life, I have power. And we just read how it works is how we find the power. Now, More About Alcoholism is designed to convince the alcoholic who's reading this, they haven't been to meetings, they haven't been to treatment, about how they don't have any power not to take the first drink. Now, why are they hammering that home? Because they know we're not going to want to do the work. We're not going to want to give up on ourselves, and we have to understand that on our own, we cannot fix this. And we read the first three or four pages, and it's up on the site. And we talked about control of how much we drink, right? We can never control how much we drink. Why? Because we have an allergy to alcohol. The allergy we have is that once it gets in my body, I want a second drink. Letty talked about how when it got on his lips, he wanted a second drink. We could smell it and we want the second drink. Anybody relate to that? Oh, yeah. In fact, when you're headed to the liquor store, you already want the second drink. I think that's pretty true. And so when they talk about that, and they talk about the man of 30 who decided that he wanted to be successful. His desire to be successful overcame his desire to drink. But he didn't give up forever because he said, once I'm successful, I can drink. So after 30 years, he started to drink again. He died in 4 years. He couldn't stop. So we covered that. And then now we're on page, and they say, once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic. We covered that. And it says the first step in recovery is that I had to fully concede. Concede means surrender to my innermost self that I'm an alcoholic. The first step does not say I'm an alcoholic, does it? Mm-hmm. We never say in the 12 steps we're alcoholic. We come to the steps admitting we're an alcoholic. And if we admit we're an alcoholic, then we're going to learn how we're powerless over alcohol in these next pages. And then we learn that our life is unmanageable on step 3 when we read those pages. Now, they didn't connect that right away. They convince us that we can't keep from the first drink without a higher power. Then we read how it works, and then they hammer home how we're separated from God, self will run riot, and that is what we have to treat. And when we treat that, everything starts to work in our lives. And we treat that through the steps of 4 through 9 and living in 10, 11, 12. So that's a little review of what we're trying to do here. On page 34, and we're just going to cover Jim tonight, so I don't think we're going to get to the Jaywalker. And it's powerful stuff. I read it again today. I've probably covered these pages, 40, 50 times. But I got a lot out of it today. It says, as I look back, I feel I could have, it says, we feel we could have gone on drinking many years beyond the point where we could quit on our own willpower. So there's a point where you could quit on your own willpower, but we drank through that. When people get here, they're past that point, usually. Unless they just had bad luck and got a DUI and they're able to quit. There's some people who come to AA, they don't stay, they quit drinking forever, they're okay. They were not past the point where they couldn't quit on their own willpower. Now, if you notice, it says our willpower, but I can quit on God's willpower. So what we want is God's willpower. If anybody questions where he's entered this dangerous area, let him try leaving liquor alone for 1 year. Well, it says if he's a real alcoholic and very far advanced, there is scant chance of success. In the early days of our drinking, we occasionally remain sober for a year or more. And you hear that in AA. A lot of people come back, they'll tell us how long they were sober before. It makes them feel better. It's okay. But we want permanent sobriety. And so we want them to do something different than they did before. It says, becoming serious drinkers again later. And usually after people drink again, it gets worse. And it gets harder to come back. And some people never make it back. That's why we really want to try to help everybody stay here. Do whatever we can to help them to do this. It says, though you may be able to stop for a considerable period, you may yet be a potential alcoholic. We think few to whom, now this is this key sentence, to whom this book will appeal can stay dry anything like a year. Some will be drunk the day after making their resolutions, which is a firm decision to not do something. Did anybody make a resolution? Firm decision not to drink? Mm-hmm. And then do it. Yep. Normal people don't do that. I had patients who were allergic to like certain medicines, and they didn't keep calling the office and want to get more of them. You know, and they didn't say, what is it enough? I need two. You know, it just doesn't happen. But we don't have that power. Most of them within a few weeks. Now, they had this Marty Mann test where she said, take two drinks a day for a month and then see if you can limit the two drinks. And now they're telling you, that tells you you can't control how much you drink. And now they're telling you, try to not drink. And most people, when they come here, have realized that they need help with that. But they have to understand that there's perfect help available, and it's not from within themselves. So they have to learn to give up on themselves as the solution, and they're going to hammer that home. For those who are not able to drink moderately, the question is how to stop altogether. Oh, I also wrote in the margin, to whom it will appeal, I wrote as patients, people who've seen the hopelessness and futility of life as they've been living it. And Dewey described how bad it was. And does anybody remember how bad it was at the moment of defeat? I don't want to ever forget. We are assuming, of course, that the reader desires to stop. Now, sometimes that's a mistake. We think everybody comes here wants to stop. But what we want is a desire beyond just lip service, true defeat. And we can't always tell. You can't tell. Now, here's a powerful warning. Whether such a person can quit upon a non-spiritual basis depends upon the extent to which he has already lost the power to choose whether he will drink or not. Now, what that means in English is that if you've lost the power to choose, you cannot quit without God and the steps. The steps are the pathway to a relationship with God, and God will help you, will tell you not to drink. He will give you power of choice. And it just happens. It's not where you wake up one day and you say, oh, I have God today, I'm not going to drink today. It's a process. Then once you have that, you have to continue working the steps to stay in contact with the power all the time. It says, many of us felt that we had plenty of character. I thought it said, many of us were characters, but no, it doesn't say that. God, I'm funny. There was a tremendous urge to stop. My wife says I think I'm funny, but I'm not that funny, but she's not here tonight. There was a tremendous urge to cease forever. Anybody have that? Tremendous urge. Cease forever for good. This book doesn't talk about one day at a time. It talks about forever. Dr. Bob, who was one of our founders, he would ask the new person, are you quit? Are you done? Are you completely done? Are you completely defeated? It's hard to tell, but you can tell those people who really want it, and then you can see what they're willing to do. Now, Dr. Bob took them through the steps in 5 days, mm-hmm. and then they came to the meetings. And so it was a different world then. There was a much closer relationship with the, between the people in the group. Yet we found it impossible. It's impossible to quit drinking for an alcoholic. It says on page 24, at certain times we cannot remember the humiliation and defeat of a moment ago. It says we are without defense against the first drink. Now, what they're telling you is if you're reading this book and you're really an alcoholic, you will drink again. Now, people come here and they drink again. We go, that's so bad. But that's what alcoholics do. It's not that they're bad people. They're alcoholics. They don't have the power. And it says, this is the baffling feature of alcoholism as we know it. Baffling means impossible to understand, perplexing. The utter inability to leave it alone, no matter how great the necessity or the wish. Very well written information, don't you agree? Very powerful stuff. How then shall we, and remember, you don't want to get too far away from that first step ever. All the time, you want to remember you're powerless over alcohol and you're powerless to run your life. So here's the key. How then shall we help the readers determine to their own satisfaction whether they are one of us? Now, the purpose of this book is for you to see if you're one of these people, because if you are, they'll tell you what they did. And they say they have recovered from a hopeless condition of mind and body. And the big book, they say, is directions on how to do that. So it says, the experiment of quitting for a period of time will be helpful, but we think we can render an even greater service to alcoholic sufferers and perhaps to the medical fraternity. So here's what they're going to do. They're going to describe the mental states that precede a relapse into drinking. Now, relapse is to slip back from a position of health. For obviously, this is the crux of the problem. The most important part of the issue with an alcoholic is what happens in your mind before you take the first drink or drug. What sort of thinking, some people say we don't think, but what sort of thinking dominates an alcoholic who repeats time after time the desperate experiment of the first drink?
You think you're going to be pain-free immediately.
Right. You think it's going to work. You must, or you wouldn't take the first drink, right? So something must tell you it's okay, and that's what they're going to talk about now. How we can know it's going to be bad and yet take the first drink. And it says, friends who have reasoned with him after a spree which has brought him to the point of divorce or bankruptcy are mystified when he walks directly into a saloon. There are people in the hospital. They're dying. They get a little bit better. They swear they're never going to drink. And on the way home, they stop at the liquor store. Now, that's not because they're bad people. It's because they have a bad disease. It's a disease that is very dangerous and fatal and can only be treated through a change in the person's personality and their relationship with their creator. So that it's explained, we understand why they do it because we're here. Why does he, of what is thinking? And so it's a disease of my thinking. That's why being smart won't help me. Knowing a lot about myself won't help me. In fact, you can get drink and recite how it works. There are people who can do it. They know how it works, but knowing it won't change me. You're going to need more. So then we're going to talk about Jim, and then we'll open it up. Our first example is a friend we shall call Jim. This man has a charming wife and family. He inherited a lucrative automobile agency. Lucky guy, right? Commendable war record. A good salesman. Everybody likes him. He is an intelligent man. Normal so far as we could see. But here's what they're getting at. We can't see into his mind. But they know he has a nervous disposition. What does that mean? Disposition is the inherent qualities of mind and character. We're nervous. Why are we nervous people? Because We live in fear because we're relying on us to run the world. Anybody do that in here? We had a delusion that I could wrest happiness and satisfaction out of life if I managed well. That got me a wristband, that delusion. It did, it got me an armband. And, yeah, I mean, it wasn't that I was bad, I had a delusion that I could manage the world and make myself feel okay. I could never do it. I'd have a good day, some things would work out for a while, but it never lasted. Now, why is that? Because we're looking out there for inner peace, and we have to look in here to be with God, and that's when we have peace. And then we learn in AA, it doesn't matter what's going on out there, we can be okay. Isn't that a great promise? So here's where Jim, he did no drinking until he was 35. In a few years, he became so violent when intoxicated that he had to be committed. On leaving the asylum, that's where they put us, he came into contact with us. We told him what we knew of alcoholism. So could you talk to a new person and tell him what you know of alcoholism? Ask yourself that. The book does that up to this point. It tells you them, tells the new person what they knew of alcoholism, and they're going to finish that by page 43. Then on page 44, they're going to talk about the spiritual solution versus going on and dying. The answer we had found. So that's why we study this book, because they found an answer. So you can ask yourself, what is the answer for you? And if you're new, you want to find the answer. He made a beginning. So he made a beginning. His family was reassembled, and he began to work as a salesman for the business he had lost through drinking. So Jim had some bad days. He lost the business. He's working for the company. And it says, all went well for a time, but here's the big warning. He failed to enlarge his spiritual life. Somebody mentioned 18 months is a tough time. It is. There's a tough time for everybody, but if you continue to maintain your fit spiritual condition, then that time won't come because you stay connected to God. But if you stop doing the deal, it can be 10 years, 20 years, 3 months, then you have no solution to the not drinking. People understand that? It says he failed to enlarge his spiritual life. To his consternation, that means his feelings of dismay, he found himself drunk a half a dozen times in rapid succession. Now, on each of these occasions, they worked with him. These guys were good. They didn't give up on Jim. We shouldn't give up on anybody, right? They're just like us. Nobody's better than anybody else. Reviewing carefully what had happened, he agreed he was a real alcoholic. So he knew he was an alcoholic, and he knew he was in serious condition. He faced another trip to the asylum if he kept on. So he knew he could not drink. Moreover, he would lose his family, for whom he had deep affection. But I wrote in here, he has a greater affection for alcohol. See, alcohol becomes our higher power, right? It dominates our thinking and our life, and it has power over us. Now, it says on the first step, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol. And that means that alcohol has power over me, and I have no power over it. And what that means is I have no God in my life. Because if I have God, a relationship with God, then I have power over alcohol. So let's see what happened to Jim. It's not good, I'm just telling you. Yet he got drunk again. Drunk again. We asked him to tell us exactly how it happened. This is his story. And I wrote, we create a false reality. And I looked up a account. It can be an account of events and can often be imaginary. So he tells us the story as he sees it. Let's see if it's really true. It says, I came to work on Tuesday morning. Now, a lot of people will say, well, where was he on Monday? Probably drunk. So he came in on Tuesday, and then he remembers he felt irritated that he had been a salesman for a concern he once owned. Can anybody relate that resentment? Yeah. Poor me. I used to own this. How did they take it away from me? Oh, poor me. He had a few words with the boss, but nothing serious, so he's starting to lie. See, he's making it imaginary. It wasn't that bad, but we know it's probably not true, right? So I wrote, true question mark. He had decided to drive into the country and see one of my prospects for a car. You think that was true?
No.
On the way, I felt hungry, so I stopped at a roadside place where they have a bar. So he knew there was a bar on the way to selling the car. I had no intention of drinking. I wrote page 24. At moments we cannot recall, the humiliation and defeat a moment ago. But do you think that's really true? See, when people take that first drink, it's just, there's something that always leads up to it in our mind. There's this mental, queer mental twist. And it says, I just thought I would get a sandwich. Sounds too good to be true, isn't it? I also had the notion that I might find a customer for a car at this place, which was familiar, for I'd been going it for years. So I wrote, true question, true question mark. Here's great. I had eaten there many times during the months I was sober. I hear that from people. They stop coming and they say, well, I've been sober 3 months and things are going great. I don't need to go to the meetings. But are they telling themselves truth or lie? You see, their ego is starting to rebuild. And it says, I'd eaten there many times. I sat down at a table and ordered a sandwich and a glass of milk. Now here's the great one. Still no thought of drinking. You think that's true? You see, we tell stories. That's why in the fifth step, we look at our life story, how we saw things, and we see how it wasn't true. He ordered another sandwich and decided to have another glass of milk. Now here, this is...
Why would you order a second sandwich and a second glass?
All right, Lenny, we'll discuss that later. All right, for those listening, this is a very intellectual group. All right, suddenly, now this is in squiggly writing, suddenly the thought crossed his mind, that if I were to put an ounce of whiskey in my milk, it couldn't hurt me on a full stomach. Now, he's not saying here, I'm going to lose my wife, I'm going to lose my kids, I'm going to go to the asylum, right? He says, I'll take it with milk. You see how we are? This is a brilliant, brilliant example of alcoholic thinking. I ordered a whiskey and poured it to the milk. Now, here's the best, probably the best three words. I vaguely sensed I was not being any too smart, but felt reassured as I was taking whiskey on a full stomach. Now, it shows how we have no defense against alcohol. See how our mind will tell us and rationalize and justify it. We've all done this. Now, the experiment went so well that I ordered another whiskey and poured it into more milk. That didn't seem to bother me, so I tried another, and then here it is. Thus started one more journey to the asylum for Jim. Powerful stuff. Here was the threat of commitment, the loss of family and position, to say nothing of that intense mental and physical suffering which drinking always caused him. He had much knowledge about himself as an alcoholic. Notice that's in squiggly writing. Mm-hmm. Yet all reasons for not drinking were easily pushed aside in favor of the foolish idea that he could take whiskey if only mixed it with milk. Now everybody who goes and says they're not going to drink and then goes drink, their mind is telling them it's okay. And why? Because they can only think of what it's going to do for them, not to them. Your mind, your willpower won't work because you could not see the consequences of that drink when he poured it in the milk. He could only think about what it was going to do for him, not to him. Whatever the precise definition of the word may be, we call this plain insanity. It's insane. Insane means you have the inability to see or act on the truth. You act on a lie. How can such a lack of proportion of the ability to think straight be called anything else? You may think this is an extreme case. To us, it is not far-fetched. For this kind of thinking has been characteristic of every single one of us. I had it. I think everybody in this room has had it. We have sometimes reflected more than Jim did upon the consequences, but there was always the curious mental phenomenon which means you can't explain it. And look at this, parallel with my sound reasoning. So you go in there, you have sound reasoning. Parallel with it in your mind, there's some insanely trivial excuse to drink. And the sound reason cannot overcome the trivial excuse. You see that? Never will. Our sound reasoning failed to hold us in check. The insane idea won out. Next day, we would ask ourselves in all earnestness and sincerity how it could have happened. And I think I'm going to stop right there. And then next week, we're going to pick up with the Jaywalker. Anybody like the Jaywalker?
Yeah. Stu does.
Yeah. We're going to read the Jaywalker, and then we're going to finish with Fred. I don't know about you, but if this doesn't take you back to your powerlessness in your first step, I don't know what else will. I want to congratulate the birthdays, and we're going to open it up, and thank you.